I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. At this time, we begin the TechNet, as we've done for the last lots and lots of years, something like 35 years, since 1982. Major purpose of the TechNet is education about wireless equipment. The curious radio amateurs, every Sunday night for the last 35 years, will gather at this time. Stand by a minute. The main purpose, as I said, was education. So the curious radio amateurs gather and teach each other wireless technology. The TechNet is set up into three sections. The first section is where people sign in with their call letters and name, because they do have a question or a comment for the net. That's followed by the second section, which is by Dr. Roy, AC2GS, which is the science and physics report. And that's followed by the third section, which is by Paul, WS2N, which is the space report. It tells us what NASA is doing. And there was a landing this week, as well as some blast-offs, as usual. There are people who will, from time to time, say, gee, that TechNet was a really interesting one. And other times they'll say, gee, that one was a little bit boring for me. The majority of what I do with the so-called question and answer period is really, the questions are set up by you. You guys ask interesting questions, challenging questions, and that part will be interesting. So that part is thoroughly extemporaneous. Also, Roy, with his part, the science and physics report, if you ask the right kind of questions, you can get the subject, you can get the discussion on almost any subject of your interest. And the same with Paul. Paul has got so much to report on what is going on with the various space agencies of the various countries around the world. If there's some particular portion of the space report that you would like to have emphasized, something that he's not covering, like what is the Japan International JAXA, whatever it stands for. In other words, their equivalent of NASA, what they're doing. If you want to hear more about their space station, you can suggest that to Paul. Let me drop. And we're variable on this thing. Last week, somebody suggested that we put the space report before the science report, and we did that last week. So we're considering the possibility of alternating back and forth. In other words, on the odd weeks, we'll put the science and physics report first. On the even weeks, we'll put the space report first, if that's what some people want. We don't hold this net as being, persnickety on the rules, that everything has to go through the net control, in other words, we go with the flow, if you know what I mean. Some people are from time to time interrupting, and we tolerate a certain amount of that. So at this time, we're going to take check-ins for people who do have a question or a comment for the net. Give me a call, letters, and name right now, and please try to wait for the four beeps in between each transmission, otherwise we'll be doing some timing out. K2RIW listening.
K2RIY, Joe, yes.
Okay, that was a triple, but I heard Joe. Who was the other person?
A2GES, Bob.
Okay, yeah, Bob. You started talking first, then you squeezed the mic. I heard blank A2GES. I'm going to guess it's KA2, could be WA2GES, Bob. And that's Golf Echo Sierra. Give me a correction on that, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that, Dick. It's Kilo Alpha 2 Golf Echo Foxtrot.
Alpha Echo Foxtrot, Kilo Alpha 2. Okay, we got you, Bob. So we got Joe, we got Bob. Who's the next person who would like to sign in? Wait for the beeps, skip for the four. Give me your call letters and name right now.
And to Rio.
Okay, we've got Rich. Who else to sign in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
KD2 PPF, Matt.
are very easy to get mixed up. It sounded like Kilo Delta 2 Papa Papa Foxtrot, but I guarantee I've got that wrong. So give it to me phonetically. Matt, go ahead.
That's Kilo Delta 2 Papa Papa Foxtrot. You had it correct.
How about that? Okay. So, once again, we've got Joe, Bob, Rich, and Matt. Anyone else give me your call letters and name right now? KQRIW listening. Okay, we've got more than enough to get going. So Joe, W-H-R-Y-Y, the man who does the most amount of digital television DXing on Long Island that I know about. And I know that's not going to be your subject tonight, but I'm envious. I haven't put up that good antenna yet to do what you're doing. And from time to time, I hear reports of somebody saying that over-the-air broadcast is going to disappear because it's all going to be on the Internet. I don't believe it. We have such a strong tradition of over-the-air broadcast, free to anyone who's got an antenna on his house, that to suddenly throw away 60 years of history, so to speak, or it's even longer than that, but you know what I mean. I doubt it. I think there'll always be over-the-air broadcast in the United States. W-H-R-Y-Y, K-R-I-W, you got it, Joe.
H-R-Y-Y, good evening, Dick. Now, what would happen if the internet went down in your local area? Then you wouldn't be able to have television reception, and that would be a damn shame. Oh, yeah, over-the-air. Well, here goes. Since I do a lot of TV DXing in different directions and so forth, here's a phenomenon that I've encountered a couple of times already. Maybe you can explain it a little better as far as what you think is going on here. I give you the case of last September, I received a station up from Burlington, Vermont, on RF Channel 14. Yet, I couldn't receive anything short of that distance. That's one example right there. Another one was maybe three weeks ago, where I got reception of two television stations west of Savannah, Georgia, yet I couldn't receive something maybe two-thirds or half the distance on other various channels. I know you call this local type of ducting, but can you explain the phenomenon of how you think this is happening, where the range is maybe 300 or 400 miles in the case of going up to Burlington, Vermont, or maybe over 800 miles going down Savannah? Yet, you can't receive stuff shorter than that. Funny phenomena, isn't it? W-H-R-Y-Y.
What kind of antenna does he use? In fact, Joe's going to tell us what antenna and what preamplifier and what altitude the antenna is on his tower. Describe your television DXing antenna with its rotator. Give us the full description of brand name, model number, cost, how long you've had it up there. Tell us about your antenna, Joe. We've got people with great interest to try to do what you're doing. W-H-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
The television antenna I am currently using on my house, which is about 35 feet up above the ground level, is a Weingard Hotel Delta 8200 uniform. I use a preamp, mass mounted preamp with this array up there also, Alpha Papa 8200. I think it's U is the number. And I'm not even sure if they make that anymore. I think they make an LNA200 now to replace that preamp. I use low loss cable. It's actually called Fat Quad cable, right up to about 2200 megahertz. So it's good quality cable that feeds my TV antenna system down. And I use a Channel Master rotor. I can't remember the exact model number. It's like it's an 821 or something like that. I have this mounted on a tower, Glenn Martin Tower, on top of my roof, which is 10 foot. I have about a 15 foot pole on top of that. And the antenna is a little shorter than the top of that pole. So it's about 35 feet above ground level. Back to you.
The person who wanted to know what antenna he's using, is there any further fills you need on what you just heard? Go right ahead and tell me your call letters and name.
No, thank you. This is W2H, no, thank you.
sounded like you said W2HO, Hotel Oscar, is that correct?
W2HO, Milo, Howie.
Okay, Howie, are you thinking of putting up something similar, Howie? And you'd like to be doing some UHF television, digital television DXing? Over to you, Howie.
Possibly, that's why I was curious to know what I was using.
And Joe, the preamplifier that you're using, what's not quite clear to me right now, is the preamplifier at the antenna or is it down in the shack? With low loss feed line, you could use that in the shack and still do very well. And that antenna plus preamplifier, rough guess as to how many dollars it would take for Howie to buy that. W-H-Y-Y-Y, K-2-L-I-W.
Oh, there I am. Now I can finally be able to listen to the other end. Okay. That antenna is about $130. It's not the first one I had up on top of the roof. The first one was a mistake. It was only a VHF and UHF model. It was a 7869, something like that, P. And that would, had a catastrophic event happen to it. My pole folded over. The aluminum pole I have up there, I had up there, folded over in a storm. And it went down into my side of my house and broke. So I replaced it with an all-band unit. That TV antenna is about $130, give or take. They list for $180, $189 directly on Channel Master's, Weingard's website. But you can buy them from like Solid Signal or a couple of the various places. You can look, just put the antenna in on Google and you'll find plenty of places that sell it a lot cheaper. The mass-mounted preamp is about $39, give or take. The rotor is about $90, and of course the tower I use it on is about $250 for the Glen Martin tower, 10-footer that bolts right through the roof. Back to you.
Okay, so for a person interested in digital television DXing, that antenna 35 feet off the ground on a Glen Martin antenna, I think it is, a mast on top of the house with a rotator made by Channel Master and the Weingard antenna. Looks to me like by normal amateur radio standards for what we pay for a transceiver, that's not an extremely high price. And once a person establishes that equipment with that rotator, you now can watch essentially a lot of television channels from the New England area, New Jersey area, Upper New York State area, New York City area. And to some point of view, my guess is you're getting a kind of television DX almost every single night. You don't necessarily have to wait for a weird weather condition. Altogether, my guess is you've got a healthy 50 channels. Well, counting the channels is a little bit difficult. If you count channel 4, and you've got a 4-1, 4-2, 4-3, and 4-4, is that one channel or is it four channels? Even though there's four different program materials. I would call it four channels. Altogether, my guess is you've got a healthy 50 channels any day of the week, and with a band opening, a lot more than that. Rough guess on my part, correct me on that one, Joe. W-H-R-Y-Y, K-2-L-I-W, wait for the beeps.
Me too, Jack. One moment, Eric. Let me tell you this, Dick. Except for RF channel 37, I have received television broadcasts on every single channel that there is from out of state. Except maybe some of the UHF ones that are very hard to get out of state ones like RF-44 and RF-47 because you got such a domineering signal locally. It's very hard to get. I haven't got DX on those two yet, but I'm working on it. Go ahead, Eric.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Hey, your last 30 seconds was timed out, Eric. Joe. You want to repeat what you just asked, Joe? Go ahead.
Yes. How come WCBS in New York is now transmitting back off the Empire State Building instead of the World Trade Center? I noticed a signal difference in not only the quality level of my meter on the converters, but I also took a look at it with a spectrum analyzer. It's the same pattern it used to be. Like many, many, many weeks ago. What happened?
After the beeps, you've got it, Eric. For what you were going to say, plus that answer.
Quick
Thanks, good job.
Okay, to RWK 2J. Well, Joe, I have a question for you. I'm just curious if you have a method of bypassing your preamp. I didn't catch whether it was up at the antenna or down below. I have my opinions about that, but never mind. CBS has never transmitted from World Trade, simply because the antenna is still not ready. That's why we're waiting. They're still coming from Empire for 13. And the UHF guys are all there, so that's why.
Well, then how would you explain a 20 decibel difference in signal level at the signal arriving at my antenna? And my preamp is a mast-mounted preamp fed with a DC signal up from the cellar where I join everything together.
Yeah, his question was, though, do you have a way of bypassing that preamp? And you might need to at some time. Over to the, Joe, over to you on that one.
No, I can't bypass the preamp, number one. And number two, the preamp I bought, the particular model, it doesn't have as much gain as another model I had, but it has much higher level of intermod susceptibility. It's raised quite a bit from the other different ones. They had one with higher gain, but the intermod susceptibility was much lower. So I chose one with a higher intermod susceptibility level. Does that sort of answer your question? I can't bypass it, and I don't really think there's any need to.
And there's a double requirement here. Even though you have a high intercept point, power output intercept point, there's a whole lot of gain in that thing that it's easy to be front-end overloaded. So did you intentionally choose one that's low enough in gain that it's not easy to overload, but just high enough in gain that it's overriding the noise figure, everything after it, and high in intercept point? Did you choose that particular combination on the preamplifier, or Joe? That's the first question. Go ahead.
Yes, and it's an AP Alpha Papa 8275. I think it's a preamp model. They don't make anymore, and they make a different one now called an LNA 200. They don't make the one that I have anymore by Weingarten. Not made. That's why I covered it. But I also, in putting up this thing initially, I put a LPF 700 filter made by Pico, two spec Pico or Pico Maycom, to start rolling off stuff above 700 megahertz. And I've got to eventually change that to something lower now. But that stops all the cellular stuff that's not far away from me from coming into my preamp and overloading it. But now with the stuff being populated more in the 700 megahertz band, I don't have that much rejection to that part of the band anymore. Back to you.
Now, the most recent question you just asked Eric, you asked it in a way that I don't think Eric or anybody could understand, could give you an answer. You said there's a 20 decibel difference in the signal strength for channel 2, what is advertised as channel 2, even though they're all really on a UHF channel. And you said there's a 20 dB difference. The 20 dB difference, you saw that between yesterday and today, you saw 20 dB of difference between this morning and tonight, or between today and a month ago. What's the time difference where you saw the 20 dB difference, Joe, to B2RYY, K2RIW?
We're straying away from my original question, you know that, but of course I guess you'll get back to that. A couple of days ago, it went off the air completely, off the air, and it was just, I checked three of my converters, and they all had no signal coming on RF33 at all. Then all of a sudden came back in the air, but the signal level wasn't good on the converter. It was good. I could watch a picture, but it was like maybe on average about 75%. Normally it's about maybe 90 to 95% on the particular converters I'm using. And I took my old trusty service monitor, hooked it up to my feed off of one of my taps from the basement, and the signal was minus 65. Previously to that, for several weeks, it's been consistently at minus 45. It is just about the strongest signal out of New York except for RF3. So you're telling me they're not transmitting to the Trade Center? I would disagree with that.
Well, Eric's going to correct all of the above. Back to the beeps, you got it, Eric.
Okay. I apologize about what I said before. That was incorrect. They're UHF. I was thinking of the VHF guys. Nobody's transmitting VHF from World Trade. Not yet. CBS has a Gates transmitter, which has been fired up a couple times, but they're still pretty much operating from Empire at this point. I don't know exactly what's going on recently, but tomorrow I can find out exactly. So, you're right, they've been on World Trade, but only for short periods of time. There were issues with the transmitter, and the last time I was up there, they weren't running it, so I'll get you some more precise information for the next time around. And Dick, actually, if you're interested, I can show you the installation manual for the antennas on that building.
The installation manual for the antennas on that building, meaning the World Trade Center, the new Freedom Tower, is that the, you're saying you've got a manual on that one? I bet it's pretty thick. Over to you, if that's what you're saying, Eric, go ahead.
Question for Eric.
Yeah, it's the installation manual, and it also has all the plots on it.
Now, the person who said question for Eric, are you the same person who got a question for Joe? Question person, could please give us your call letters and name and proceed. K2LIW, my name is Dick.
Same KC1CR, Alpha Mike. I'll throw both my questions out just so Joe has it. Joe, I was curious about what you use as a tuner or as a converter. That's really my question for Joe. But a quick one for Eric, as long as we're on the TV. Eric, a while ago, Channel 4 was 4142-4344. 1 and 2 disappeared. I'm assuming that's when they went to World Trade. But 1 and 2 are back now, as well as 3 and 4. Are they transmitting from both locations? Over to you, Eric.
Just waiting for the beep. Negative, actually. They're transmitting. They originally set it up where that, if you remember, if you watch Channel 4, they were telling you, you don't retune your receiver, you're not going to get them anymore. What actually happened was, in the beginning, when they were transmitting 4-3 and 4-4 from NJU's transmitter at World Trade, they had 4-1 and 4-2 still coming from Empire until, X number of weeks ago when they turned it off. What they've done is they actually put the PSIPs for 4-1 and 4-2 and decided to leave the PSIPs for 4-3 and 4-4, all coming from the World Trade Center from the same transmitter. 4-1 is the same contents as 4-3, and 4-2 is the same contents as 4-4. It's just a, those numbers are virtual, meaning they could set it up so it was 4-1, 4-3, 4-5, whatever they wanted to create. But in reality, the only streams that are running are NBC and Cozy TV. And along with that stream is WNJU, which is 47. So, that's the answer. And by the way, the reason why I asked about the preamp is because, let me write it to that. Well, we've got a bunch of guys out there that are doing DXing. And one of the things that they found is that even with the very quiet preamps, because of the nature of the digital signal, a lot of times you won't get a signal locked because it's strong enough, you see enough signal, but the preamp actually increases the amount of impulse noise. I'm not talking about intermod or inner symbol distortion in the traditional sense. But when you turn the transmitter off, when you turn the preamp off, a lot of times you will get that weak station that you couldn't get before. So that's why I asked him, what's the other since we put a little bypass relay on it. When you remove the juice from the coax, the relay clicks, just goes to full, and you get it without the preamp. And so you suffer a tiny little insertion loss. Okay.
What do you believe is the vulnerability to impulse noise. Well, I guess that's really just part of the problem with 8GSB. Impulse noise gives it a lot of grief. I wonder if there would be anything to be gained if we had that rare item, a output side of the preamp variable attenuator. If we had a variable attenuator and the output of the preamp, assuming the preamp is located in the shack, or no, no matter where the preamp's located, if we had a variable attenuator on the output of the preamp during the time you're getting impulse noise, do you believe, although that would make an impulse, that would make an impact on the noise figure as a secondary effect, but is there any possibility that would improve this vulnerability? KE2EJ, K2LIW, go ahead, Eric.
Not sure.
Can I answer Sam's question? You're also getting way off topic of my original question, Dick.
Yeah, we're going to come back to it. Don't worry, you're going to get your service on your question. Eric, KE2EJ, K2LIW, go ahead, Eric.
K2IW, K2J. Here's the thing, okay? Even though preamps are in theory flat, but, you know, you're looking across a 6 megahertz of a bit of an amplifier. And as you know, there are some differences. There's differences in phase, there's group delay, there's this, that, the other thing. The concept of turning the preamp off, and when we look at it more than just a spectrum analyzer, when we look at it with a scope that can actually see the RF, it appears that, you know, there's a certain threshold in which the receiver's decoder is going to start locking. And then you have something in this part of the band, which is a little bigger than a little something in that part of the band. When you run it through the preamp, it seems to exaggerate it for whatever reason. I'm not going to even try to explain it because I'm not sure I completely understand it. But the point is, you get enough that you can actually get the damn signal locked up and find out what the heck station you're looking at. So, that's the best I can say at this point.
When it comes to what's really going on inside of an 8VSB, 8 vestigial sideband broadcast television transmission reception, Eric, KE2EJ, is one of the best people I know of what's really going on and its vulnerabilities. One of the things that I have had experience with is that when preamplifiers are driven to near saturation, many of them will do an instantaneous phase shift. So here's my question. If impulse noise comes along during the time you're getting digital television reception, such that the preamp is therefore giving you a impulse-created digital phase shift during the impulses, to your knowledge, does that create an additional vulnerability of an 8VSB demodulator? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Well, here's what I'm going to put in your mind, K2LIW, K2EJ. You take a very short duration pulse, or even a square wave, and you get this thing that actually starts ringing, especially if you got some reduction in bandwidth. The duration of the impulse noises, and some of it's purely atmospheric, are very short in duration. And it seems like there's some ringing that goes on.
Okay, the tuning of the amplifier, if it's got any finite Q, if it's got a real rise time and a real fall time, and they all do, and you got an impulse noise that's only a nanosecond long, but it's potent, it's got a significant amount of energy, it's going to set that preamplifier into a ring on each one of those impulses. And I think you're saying, depending on how many of those you're getting per second, it could take the demodulation capability of the demodulator and drive it kind of crazy. Is that sort of what's going on here, Eric? KE2EJ, K2IW.
Yeah, when you think about old analog television, you're sleeping in these ghosts. But here, a sync wave comes in on every 350 milliseconds. And if it don't see it, or it's disturbed, or it gets the wrong letter or number, if you want to call it that, it's not very happy. When you're doing DX, the fact that you may be getting a number of bounces here and there, you know, the signal is degraded to a certain extent to start with, so. It's not like when you're listening to AM or sideband where you can tolerate a lot of stuff. You can't tolerate nothing, so, you know, it's a hard game. Anything you can do to improve that gets you either success or failure, because there's very little in between here.
Where he is using a band-pass filter or a low-pass filter, he's using a filter that takes an awful lot of out-of-band stuff. The impulse noise could be really potent at, say, 50 megacycles, and many a preamplifier has got a hell of a lot of gain down at 50 megacycles, even though you're listening to 500 megacycles at this time. So with that filter of his taking away that lower frequency, tremendous amount of integrated noise, I think that could be another factor that's helping here. That, and if the manufacturer would give you enough information, it would certainly be nice to buy a preamplifier that has a rating on the input rated intercept point as opposed to output. They almost always give you output because it's a much more desirable sounding number. But what we care about here is input intercept point. But is it a possibility that his filter is helping an awful lot, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, if I had a guess, if he had a filter that rolls off 3 dB, it's, you know, 50 megahertz, and stays up there until you get to the FM band and then makes it go away again and then come back, I'd say that's giving him a lot of help, that's for sure.
Yeah, part of why I skipped over your original question, Joe, is that I don't really have much of an answer for... when it comes to VHF reception, you get skip zones because of the way you get to bounce off the, and HF frequencies because of the bounce off the ionosphere. When it comes to UHF television, 500 megacycle reception, with rare exception, there is no ionosphere. There is no echo off of a particular cloud level, so to speak, at the F1 level or F2 level or so on, D, C, E, any of those levels. Now, when it comes to extended ground wave is what an awful lot of people call it. Let me drop it.
Yeah, it's something for those low channels.
Go ahead, Eric.
We live in one of the most highly populated neighborhoods. That's why you'll never find a channel 14, 15, 16 in this neighborhood, simply because there's all this public service stuff that's constantly popping up and disappearing, which makes things next to impossible. An interesting story up on Glen Oaks, somebody had moved a channel 19 from up in Connecticut, where it was licensed, down to New York. And when they turned it on, the FCC nearly lost its mind because of all the hundreds of police departments that were calling them.
Shouldn't the friendly candy company have been able to anticipate that, knowing what frequencies are in use and where the transmitters are located? I mean, that sounds to me like somebody was asleep at the switch on that one, is my overly pessimistic answer. Over to you, Eric.
Now, that's the interesting thing, and it's happened a lot. There seems to be very little coordination between the private radio bureau and the broadcast bureau. They don't seem to talk to each other a lot.
You and I would wish they had a computer program that bridged the gap between them, but I guess you're saying that has not yet been established. Is that true, Eric?
It has, but don't forget, there's only certain places where those frequencies are occupied by public service. We happen to be one of them. Los Angeles is another. Washington, D.C. is another. And somehow or other, they seem to miss that.
To answer your original question, what little bit I can, Eric, I've seen those effects. I've seen band openings on the 432 meg single sideband ham radio band, where a long distance signal, in other words, you're hearing a beautiful signal from Florida. I remember for about a 40 hour period, one summer, 20 years ago, Florida on 432 was coming through like gangbusters. Guys using 5-watt rigs into a yucky antenna in Malvern, Florida, came roaring through for 40 solid hours up here in New York. whereas the guys in Virginia, we could just barely hear them. So I've seen weird atmospheric conditions that give you that, but I haven't got an explanation for it. But here's my question for you on a different subject. Because Channel 4-1 and 4-2, for periods of time, comes from one location in New York City. Channel 4-3 and Channel 4-4 comes from another place. And you quite often measure signal strength with your service monitor. Have you seen a significant difference in signal strength on 4-1? Wait a minute. They got the exact same carrier frequency, and you're setting the service monitor to a carrier frequency. Eric, correct me on this one, Eric. Is there any way he could measure the signal strength of 4-1 and compare it to 4-3, even though they're on the exact same RF frequency, without it first going through a demodulator? I'm suddenly concluding I was asking a question that's crazy. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
No, today I would say no. Go back a couple months and I would say yes. But then they weren't transmitting on the same frequency. 4-1 and 2 was on NBC's original channel, which was, 38 or 35, I forget. And then they moved over to NJU, which is there now, and NJU's frequency, which is, I have to look. They used to be 46, I think. I remember. I tend not to keep track of everything with the other guy that I work with knows them off the tip of his tongue. But today, 4-1, 4-2, 4-3, 47-1, I think it's a 47-2, they all coming from the same place on the same RF carrier. And the fact that it says 4-1, 2, 3, 4 really is a virtual number. It's not a real number.
Wow. Okay. So 4-1, 2, 3, and 4, even though they're different programming materials, are all on the exact same carrier, the exact same emitter, the exact same transmitter going to the exact same antenna. On that exact frequency, could you also create what looks like a virtual 4-1 and a 5-1? Or, in other words, is the number in the front really telling us one way or another the exact carrier frequency? Or can you actually go the next step where on that carrier you could make a 4-1, 2, 3, 4, and a 5-1 on that exact carrier? That's my question. K2EJ, K2LAW.
Well, if I wanted to, I could make channels 21-1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Actually, there is one station that's got like 12 or 14 different services. Some of them are video, some of them are audio. But really, all that number is, and it doesn't represent the RF frequency, that number is just like your IP address. Okay, your computer is on the internet and you're on 96.12.44.something-something. That's the address of your computer. Well, guess what? It's exactly the same thing. Okay, that address in your computer is a header, which is a bunch of bytes in a stream. Those virtual numbers are the same thing. They're just a header in the virtual bytes of the stream. What it actually does is it identifies any packet that's associated with 4-1, because it'll be packed, will know which thing it is, and there's a table in it. It'll look it up and say, okay, 4-1, that means PID number 41 is the video for 4-1, and PID number 43 is the audio for 4-1, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for whatever number you want. If you wanted to have 4-1 and 5-1 on the same stream, be my guest. You could have 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, 7-1. Whatever you want to stick in there.
Dick, can I answer Sam's question, then you can go to the next guy, because you're getting over on a tangent here, you know?
I've gotten my questions asked, so go ahead with your additional question, Joe.
Not a question, it's an answer for KC1SAM. You listening out there, Sam? I use an Insignia decoder, model number NS-DXA1-APT. APT stands for antenna pass-through. I'll read that again. NS-DX81-APT. Put that number on eBay. You can find a brand new one in the box for about $25. And I'll tell you how well these things work. Through the antenna system I have a bag full of 75 ohm attenuators of various denominations, 20 dB, 10 dB, 6 dB, 3 dB, 1 dB. I've made combinations up in front of one of my converters. In fact, a couple of them tested. They all test similarly. I can reduce the signal coming out of New York down to about minus 90 dBm, and I can still get a picture lockup.
Boy, that's a nice converter. Now, there's a little bit of an ambiguity. NS-DX, I don't know if you said 8th alpha or 8-1. So, November Sierra-DX something 1-AP. Now, give me a fill on that one, Joe.
Since all you hams love phonetics, and you can't do without them, Nancy, Sierra, or November Sierra, Dash, Delta, X-ray, Alpha, 1, Dash, Alpha, Papa, Tango.
Okay. And what that's the model number, and what's the brand name? And I think you said if I just put that model number into Google, it'll find it for me, or Amazon is what I think you're saying. I'll owe to you on that, all of that above, Joe.
The converter's name is Insignia, I-N-S-I-G-N.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
In Korea, they make the same decoder you probably got from Radio Shack. Look similar, the same size is the same. Anyway, when I went to buy more of my book, because I bought two at with the TV coupon back in 2009, when I went to buy some more, about maybe 8 months later, they all were gone. I said, why? He says, people were returning them in droves because they don't work. And all that thought, I wasn't even going to argue with the guy. I said, mine work fine. If you don't hook them up with a good antenna, nothing will ever work good off the air. So, what can you say, Dick?
Okay, so people were returning them. Does that mean they're available to us? Wait for the beeps.
Best Buy got rid of them. They were gone. They weren't in the store. They were sent back to wherever Best Buy got them. They're gone. You can find them, and that's probably where I found them, on eBay. You put that number in on eBay, just that number by itself, it'll show up with the converter. Insignia converter, you can buy them as first. I've seen them as cheap as $25, because I bought two brand new in the box for about $25 each off of eBay.
Fantastic. Available at eBay. You bought your last one how long ago? And do you have reason to believe that eBay still has them today? And really wait for the beep this time, Joe. You've been timing out. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. I'm listening to duplex, by the way, so I don't hear. The effect you talk about, I don't hear, because I hear myself coming out of the other link. But anyway, one of my converters finally crapped out. It wouldn't go into a start mode to start itself up. Plug it in, and it wouldn't go into start mode, so I replaced it. Maybe 5-6 weeks ago, because I have three converters on my three old 20th century television sets.
Okay, sounds like they are still available. In other words, there's a market out there that realizes that this thing does the job for somebody who knows how to use it correctly with a real antenna on the front end. Maybe with any further fields on the information that Joe has been supplying to us, all those model numbers and brand name, whatever, give me a call letters right now if you need it. K2RAW in the TechNet.
So final comment, KC1SAM.
Go ahead, SAM. Wait for the beeps.
Yeah, I have to guess where the beeps are too, because I'm coming in and I'm listening to the 375 repeater. I just want to say thanks, Joe. I wrote it down. I'm already on the computer looking. Best Buy has them for $80, but eBay has them for about $25. So I'll poke around a little bit and pick one up for the fun of it. I do watch the New York channels. I got a 7-foot parabolic about maybe 85 feet up in a tree. I like trees. I can't have a rotor on it, but I got aiming right towards New York. But, someday I can get it to rotate. I like to play around a little bit. Anyway, thanks very much, and thank you, Dick, for picking me up Back over to you, KC1 SAM, clear.
Very fine, Sam. Come in anytime. Okay. I learned a lot on that one. Okay, let's see if Bob is still with us. KA2, Golf Echo Foxtrot, I think it is. You've got it, Bob. K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Okay, Dick. Name is Bob. I have an antenna problem. I have two masts. One is on my house, and it's a 15-foot pipe, and it has a 220 antenna on top of it. And it's bolted onto the side of the house, which is indoor, and all those things. That one's been up for 40 years. I put one up about 10 years ago, a mast mounted onto a metal bracket and supported with cement blocks and weights. And it's 15-foot pipe with clamps, and it has my 6-meter coaxial antenna, it has my 10-meter antenna, and a... Sorry about that. Okay. And it has my High Sierra low band antenna. Let me drop it again. Now, the other day, I get a guy who comes to my house from the town of Hempstead, and he issues me a summons because I have no permits for my ham radio antennas. I didn't know I had to have permits for my ham radio. And I said, you've been here before because you came 2 weeks ago because I had a car in the driveway with no license plates that I was trying to sell, and I finally got rid of it, and you gave me a summons for that. Now, I got rid of the car. So he comes back and he hits me with, oh, your antennas are illegal now. What can I do? Because I've called the town. Let me drop it. I've called the town, asked for a supervisor. They tell me that anything over 8 1/4 inches off the ground needs a $200 minimum permit. I said, but he was here before, and when I had my pool inspected 3 years ago, you guys didn't say anything. The antennas were up. He said, well, maybe we didn't notice them. But now you notice them? What can I do, Dick? Or does anybody have any information?
Boom. Your signal is quite noisy, Bob. Just better let you know about that. We're hearing everything you're saying, but you're giving us 80% noise, 20% audio. We're hearing all your words. So whatever you've changed from the time you signed in until now made your signal kind of noisy. I'm going to warn you that individual zoning boards and homeowners associations and whatever in individual towns, individual municipalities, individual counties, boy, they've all got their own set of rules, and some of them are absolutely crazy. The one thing that most communities will accept is a television receiving aerial. But there's even an exception to that. Frank, N2FF, lived in a community where you're not even allowed to have a television aerial on the incorporated village that he lived in. Let me drop. Now, because you being a really straightforward, honest, overly honest amateur radio operator, you may have volunteered the information to you, to them, that those are ham radio antennas. So maybe you no longer have this ability, but a few people have gotten by saying that is a television aerial. I use that for television reception because I can't afford a cable. I can't afford satellite TV. I'm watching over-the-air television. And so most communities do not have a restriction on television aerials. I wonder if there's a chance that you can convince them of that. Other than that, it's going to be difficult. And There's no glamour fix, because whatever works in one community doesn't work in another community, because they've got entirely different rules. And these guys in individual adjacent communities sometimes don't even, the zoning boards don't even talk to each other and compare rules to find out if one has got something crazy and the other does not. Do you think there's a chance you could, at this late date, convince them, or actually put up a television aerial, so you'll be 100% honest, that is my television aerial, KA2GEF, K2RIW, over to you, Bob.
K2J with some info.
Eric first, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, there's a federal law that's called, I think, the POB1, and there's some new stuff passing through Congress right now that will prevent municipalities and homeowners associations and stuff like that from preventing you from putting up a ham radio antenna, simply because we provide communications in times of emergency. And the Department of Homeland Security and a few others have gotten involved, and it's going to be a law pretty soon, but with this Congress, who knows the way it's going to be. But PRB1 also says an awful lot of stuff about ham radio operators being able to have antennas in restricted areas. So, if you do some research, you'll find out there's a lot of test cases and cases that went through court that actually the hams won out. So, and it's going to get better, but it's not quite there yet.
Okay, let me reword what I think you just told me, Eric. That is, our current regional manager for ham radio, ARRL, or whatever, are in the process of creating a stronger rule that when it finally gets through Congress, we amateur radio operators will have some relief that gets us out from under the zoning boards and homeowners associations that are putting restrictions on the height and location of a ham radio antenna. So that is coming down to us at some time in the future when some one of the Congresses allows that to get through. For the time being, I think the only defense we've got that's a little bit more universal, even that's not true in every community, is that if you claim it is a pure television over-the-air broadcast receiving antenna because you can't afford the alternatives, that gives you a little bit more leeway in some communities. That's a guess on my part. KE2EJ for comment, K2RIW in the TechNet.
You know, if you want to play that game, you can always put up a clothesline, and in the clothesline, it's a piece of wire. There's lots of games you can play, but get in touch with Frank Fallon. He can tell you about PRB1 and what you can actually do and what's being able to be done. But yeah, there's a lot of tricks you can play, but I think he already announced to the folks to be that he is who he is, so he kind of put himself at a disadvantage there.
Frank Fallon, by the way, is N2 Foxtrot Foxtrot. So, I know we don't have great news for you, Bob, but maybe that helps a little bit. KA2GEF, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, Bob. Wait for the beeps.
Okay. What I was thinking of doing, the one on the roof, which is hard for me to get to, it's been up there many years. I don't climb anymore, and it's a large mass. I was going to tell them that was, because it's 220. Hey, I was going to say, that's my TV antenna for Channel 13. I listen to public service, because 220 is right around there. So, that I might get away with. The other one, I have an antenna. I could probably put it on there, but I'm going to hold off. I don't need to add it. I know what it is. My neighbor, because I had a stockade fence that's been up there for 20 years. Andy blew it down a couple of times. I fixed it, put it back up. The guy's dog, he has a pit bull that bangs the hell out of it. Then finally he put up a nice fiberglass 6-foot fence, and I took my old fence down. And I, he resented the idea that I took my old fence down. I said, I thank you for putting putting up that nice fence. Because now your dog can't get into my yard, and I don't have to repair it anymore. He didn't like that. So now he calls them on me for every little thing. So that's my problem. I might just pay the $200 and say the hell with it. And keep my antenna. If I'm going to pay for it, I'm going to bring it up another 10 feet. So, all right. That was POB1, you said, Eric?
PRB1, Papa Radio Bravo Dash 1. Over to you on that one, Bob.
You know, our folks in Florida put up PVC flagpoles and they put their antennas inside of that.
Bob, you're being painfully honest again with the 220 antenna is close to channel 13. You think they really understand wavelength and whether or not the antenna is the right length? That could be a UHF parabolic dish receiving antenna, and you could tell them they're using it on channel 2. And in both cases, you're calling it a television receiving aerial. Don't worry about those fine details. But with hindsight, maybe you shouldn't tell them that any of this is ham radio. But by the way, if they've got a $200 rule for anything that's more than 4 inches high, but then if you pay the $200, does that mean you can put up any altitude, even above 35 feet, so to speak? Over to you, Bob, T2LIW, wait for the beeps.
Yeah, he told me it had to do with the cost of the tower. I said, well, it's not a tower, it's a pipe. And, you know, it's only a 15-foot galvanized pipe. It didn't cost me $1,000. He says, all right, as long as it's under $1,000 and the cost of the antennas is under $1,000, yeah, you can pay $200 for it. If it goes over $1,000, or if we think it's over $1,000, then you'll have to pay more. And, yeah, sometimes it doesn't pay to be honest with you, Dick. KA2GEF for ID. And I'm using a portable because they also told me that my antennas that I have on my air conditioner are another $200. I have a 6-meter antenna on my air conditioner, you know, base loaded mag mount, and I have a UHF mag mount, and I have a dual band mag mount on my air conditioner. That is another $200, believe it or not.
QEC with a question.
Something like QEC for the question. Stand by a minute. Bob, you live in Baldwin. It looks like Baldwin is really the local zoning board is really going crazy with setting their crazy rules. Wow. The person with the question, give us your full call letters and name and proceed with your question.
Yeah, KD2HUC, Steve. I'm just curious if Bob has gone to the website and actually downloaded a copy of the requirements, because this sounds more like an overzealous inspector and less actual written law. I would, before I did anything, I would probably want to see in writing exactly what regulations this man is citing and actually read them for myself, because, man, it sounds like a little bit of zeal, if you know what I mean. KD2HUC, back to net.
Very good information, Steve. Glad you came along. Yep. When you look at the zoning law itself of your particular town, and hopefully it's on the on a website. In some cases, you actually have to go out and spend $25 and buy a copy of it. But when you see it in writing, you're going to be very disappointed. First of all, you're not going to hear what that inspector was saying. On top of that, when you read various chapters, you'll find almost every town has got zoning law that individual chapters conflict with other chapters. In some cases, they'll say, for instance, that the height of these structures, like a telephone, like a flagpole, doesn't count when it's in front of a church or a school building. Some other place will say that no matter what the location is, it's not allowed to exceed X number of feet. You'll find things.